is Henning von Kügelgen. This session is called Germany After the Iron Curtain. It doesn't express my bad English. It is meant to be after and not beyond or behind the Iron Curtain. Therefore, we will talk today especially about the time after the Berlin Wall has been fallen down and how these changes now affected both West and East Germany, the so-called reunited Germany. We have had a session a few days ago with the title The Fall of the Berlin Wall, not just a matter of international politics. And as a matter of fact, that's exactly my attitude. I call those the three E's what I would like to talk about, the events, emotions and effects on everyday life, because the news we get from the mass media are basically related on international politics, on economics. They don't deal so much with the effects on the people. And this situation is pretty outstanding, what we have had now, and it tells us a lot about social psychology, about what is going on, and I will try to give some personal experiences as an alternative information. You are always welcome to interrupt me or to answer questions, and I will try to do the best. I just wonder, I should wear this.
Me, yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
She's still in the kitchen.
Let me, just because not all of you had the chance to be here on Friday, on that session, just try to summarize the basic points in a few sentences. We have been talking about the events leading to the so-called bloodless or silent revolution in November 89, and I tried to point out that, as a matter of fact, the possibility that these changes could be at that particular time were somehow a matter of coincidences and were very much related to the 40th anniversary of the GDR existing and the effects it had on the people when they found out that even the big brother, the Soviet Union, was able, after many, many years, to try it at least to change, like that what Gorbachev said when he was referring to perestroika or glasnost. And they found out, as I pointed out on Friday, that it was very hard to get any kind of information, like the translations of the speeches of Gorbachev in East Germany, what gives you already a hint about the reception of Gorbachev's politics by the leaders of the former GDR. So this actually was leading then to these Monday demonstrations, who were somehow a result of the people who were eager to leave their homes without taking anything with them, by staying in countries they have been visiting during the summer holidays and going into West German embassies in Czechoslovakia, in Hungary and in Poland, and were somehow bailed out at the very end and kind of shipped through East Germany, what didn't make it much easier for those people to accept that some of their neighbors could pass by, you know, close enough to be recognized and seen through the big cities in the south of East Germany, through Saxony, and they would go to a country what they would dream of going to, at least for a visit, not to live there necessarily, and they would know that they would have to wait until they were retired to go there, to have these opportunities. So all this worked together, and very much, of course, and we will talk a little about that today, artists and many members of the church or of the various churches in East Germany have also worked out things what helped to make the theoretical basis for this kind of movements, and that people started more and more to analyze their situation and to become more critical on the disadvantages they felt very much. However, very recently there were two publications here, both from the September 91 National Geographics, what gives a very picturesque image of the so-called reunification and what was happening after. Therefore, the article is called Germany the Morning After, so it's kind of hangover report. The other articles, there are actually three, are from The Economist, what don't give that many pictures, but I would recommend this article much more because they're more detailed, and I feel that they are closer to the reality I experienced than the other article. Even though National Geographic, as I know, is the fourth biggest magazine in the US, and so probably a little more powerful than The Economist. Okay, so what I would like to discuss today is that we just continue our little history with the last year, was July 1st, when we had this union of economics and a currency, and talk a little later then about this German unification on the October 3rd, and perhaps a little about this year. Therefore, I don't know very much about the last 2 months since I've been here at Holden Village. Again, due to the situation of the mass media, who won't give that detailed information I was used to have before. We can, if there is time left, we can talk about a variety of aspects of Germany today, of the effects, what this reunification has on economy, on the environment, and as I already pointed out, the role of the church and the artist and their shift before and after. And perhaps if there's some time, we might try to evaluate all these things and try to find out what does it all mean besides being part of the history. Therefore, I said that the only thing we learn from history is that it doesn't learn from history. Okay. July 1st, 1990, there was the date for this union of currency. That meant that now all of a sudden, both in East and West Germany, we would have the same coins, the same bills to pay whatever we had to pay. But that also meant that all of a sudden people in all over East Germany had to get used to a different currency. This is one of plenty examples, again, why reunification is not the right word, because if you use the example of a divorced couple who will marry again, they have somehow, you know, they should have at least the same power and the same influence on their future and their partnership. In the German situation, it is just like a part of the country being colonized by the other part because of the economical power of one country, and the problems the other country had to deal with, like losing their ideology. You know, what would people think about now, since they have been taught over decades of the century that the communism is the one and only way to live together in society, and now they were told that this doesn't work and it breaks apart everywhere all over Europe. So there was this kind of lack, and that meant very much that it meant for other people to follow new ideologies like sects, religious sects who could come in, or people who would just, you know, turn over to capitalism and would, regardless to what it means to other people, just follow this now and just, you know, turn around 180 degree. So the first, what happened actually was that relatives of mine came to me and said, you know, so how much money do you actually need for food? How much do you pay every month to get your beverages and you know, all what you need? So they were very insecure. What's going on now? How far will we get with the money what we have? The wages had to be risen, and they were risen actually, but it took almost a year till they got as far as 65% of that what the same job would get paid in West Germany. It's still like that. East Germany, the people who do work in a bank or in a factory would get about 65 to 70% of that what a person would get in the West, even though it's the same money now. So
this is kind of injustice, and East Germany was actually just becoming member of the Federal Republic of Germany, what meant that they have now to obey the West German laws and to follow West German rules and to do everything the West German way, and that makes West German people very arrogant, and East German people have to struggle a lot with that, because they, especially now when they have to have some kind of self-confidence to build up things, you know, plans, work out things, projects, being initiative, they feel very much unhappy about themselves, that they can't deal with anything. They have to struggle for so many things in daily life, like filling in tax forms. I mean, they never have been paying taxes before. They have now to get the social insurance, they have to pay the health insurance, they have to take care of so many things, what we all know, because we learn to deal with these kind of things, but we're entirely strange to them.
But at the beginning of this year, you know, when the economic, when they joined, their money was worth nothing, so did they have to go from zero?
No, they had, their money was worth something, because there was, of course, they had saved a lot of money. There was nothing to buy, actually, in East Germany before. If you have had your TV set and your car, what you would have to wait for about 20 years, usually people were ordering a car when the child was born and hoping that they could get it when the child would be allowed to drive the car.
So the West Germans put a value on the East German money. When you traveled, yes, in East Germany, why? It was worth nothing if you took it out.
That's right. They had this special day, and on that day everybody was supposed to change the West German marks into the East German marks into West German marks at a specific rate. I don't remember exactly, but I think the rate was that per person you could change, I think, 4,000 marks, 1 to 2. That means that you get, for 8,000 East German marks, you would get 4,000 West German marks. And, yeah, is it?
When this all happened, did the individual states in East Germany each by itself say, I want to join the Federal Republic? Or did the entire government and the whole structure simply say, we're going to join West Germany?
It was, of course, that we have had lots of elections between November 89 and the reunification in October 1990.
And therefore, all the contracts were actually made between the government of East Germany and the government of West Germany. So,
Not individual states.
No individual states. That meant, of course, and that's still a matter of discussion, you know, that, as I tried to point out last Friday already, that very many people actually didn't really want to join the Federal Republic. They thought about a better German Democratic Republic. A country would allow them to travel freely and to every place in the world, and a country would allow them to speak to everybody about any subject.
Them, is that the idea? They were outvoted.
Yes. Because, of course, after these many years of communist government, people were voting very right. You know, that was actually one of the reasons that Chancellor Kohl was still so powerful, even though not everything has worked out as well as it was promised when he was elected. But back to this day when the money was changed. So everything else what you would have would be changed to a rate from 1 to 5. So they would, of course, lose something in terms of numbers, but they would gain something because a TV set, for example, cost about 10 or 15,000 marks in their currency, and now it would cost 1,000 marks. So it's very easy to see that even though they had a bad rate, the value wasn't worse. And it was very surprising to me to see how many East German people were able to buy a Mercedes or a BMW right after this economical union was done, you know. And so we have, if you go to the north of East Germany, you will see that almost no building not having a satellite receiver. What means they must have bought at least a Western TV set and the satellite receiver and this parabolic antenna, you know, everything. And, so actually that was also one of these nice deals what many Western companies did. You know, they made these, I don't know the proper English word, these contracts where you sign in and you just pay monthly a little rate, and yeah, that's what they did, and everybody thought in East Germany, well, we will keep earning that money what we have now, and we will be able to pay that in the next 10 or 15 years what we just bought. But all of a sudden, you know, economics changed, and of course they lost their job. So we had this Treuhandanstalt, this very huge plant or firm or whatever, who would get everything what the East German state owned in order to privatize it. And it was the biggest firm in the world all of a sudden because it was so huge, you know. And they really had to struggle a lot over the month at first to find out what they actually own. And what they have, and you know, to whom to offer it, and how much the value would be to make national and international investors knowing what's going on, what could they have and what could they get. I read now in the Economist that now about 100 firms are sold per week, and but that it took quite a while to get that far now. So it's now things are going on, you know, because at the beginning this big Treuhandanstalt didn't have telephone or telefax or computers or anything, you know. They had to build up the whole communication systems first, and there was no connections before, because all the telephone connections we had between East and West were about 6,000, and they all run through the Stasi center because they were all taped and they were all listened through. So there was no phone calls between East and West Germany in the last 40 years what hasn't been recorded somehow. And so when they came into this headquarter of the Stasi, they took an axe and had to cut through this huge bunch of cables in order to, as a sign or as a symbol for getting rid of this control of the big brother who was not just watching but also listening to everything you would do. Therefore, they didn't need so many connections because they haven't had enough employees to listen to all those talks, you know. But now all of a sudden you need much more connections, and they managed to work out that we got, meanwhile, the last 1.5 years about, I think, 35,000 new phone connections between West and East. And now, little by little, it's possible to call somebody in East Berlin or Leipzig or Dresden without dialing again and again and again and again. Not because that specific phone would be engaged, but the line would be engaged. And the other way around as well. So firms really had to struggle at the beginning, and they would do many things like sending messengers over and in order to communicate somehow, you know. On the other hand, they changed, of course, now on this day, on the July, the currency, but that doesn't influence the stamps, for example. So now all of a sudden very many things became very cheap in East Germany, like stamps. So in all big West Berlin firms and mail order companies would all go just over to East Berlin and send all their mail from there, because it would save them about 60% to 80% of the costs. So what happened? The whole system broke down again, you know, because they couldn't deal with that many stuff, especially because in the East they don't have the machinery, you know. In the West you have all these computers, and they can read the little letters and do everything automatically, but there they had to sort it by hand. And the post, of course, was one of the first things, because it belonged to the state now, they had to send people home, because they said, well, we have that much work, but we don't have the money to pay you, so you are unemployed. There was always very strange things going on, like sometimes the same people who have been without any function but watching other people would now remain in high positions, and that would make people, of course, very unhappy, because those who have been working over years and years for these companies and have not been involved at all in political affairs would lose their jobs. And sometimes you had it upside down, that those who were recognized as being kind of Stasi agents, we found out that there were 109,000 Stasi agents additionally to those who were employed by the Stasi, you know, like people who would be like you and me, just sitting around and making little remarks and telling them later to somebody else. And so, of course, very often high positions in firms were people like that, and they became, you know, door holders in the same company. And you probably can imagine what that means for people, how to interact then, how people would talk to them then.
Would it be cheaper for a West German to go to East Germany and buy property, or not?
Yes, of course, especially in this time what we talk about at the moment. That's actually what very many did. They just moved over and made a fortune in a few weeks, you know. And so that was one of the many, many disadvantages of speeding up these things. Like, on the other hand, you know, in a way I'm quite happy now that it was done so fast, even though I didn't agree and I didn't feel happy that was... So unjust what was going on, but maybe in the political situation we have nowadays, the world politics wouldn't have made it possible anymore. So they choose the right moment to liberate East Germany from the whole Eastern Bloc. You know, like, see what's going on in the Soviet Union. If you have, it's a big difference if you have to deal with one person or with 15 persons to talk to, whether you can, you know, work as you want, as you would like to. All right, so there was this huge insecurity. Like rents, for example, are still very cheap in East Germany. Laws were made, we just spoke about these people from the West coming.
of course, there were soon made laws that West German people couldn't buy or do anything. On the other hand, you want that you have West German investors to build up the plants, you know. So it's somehow a contradiction. It was very, very, very strange how to work it out. And as usual, it worked out in the worst way. So the bad guys, you know, they were able to find people who could from East Germany who would buy in their own names for these companies to get very much property, like housings, because houses are very expensive. Very valuable, because we are still short of 500,000 of flats all over Germany, and especially in big cities like Berlin, they become very soon very valuable. On the other hand, the rents can't rise a lot because of laws. What give the people who live there the security that the rent may rise not more than 10% a year, and they pay. It's hard to compare, but let's say that for a place in the size of this room in West Berlin, you would probably pay about $300 to $500, depending on what area it is. In East Germany, a place in this size would cost about $20 or $30 a month. So, you know, it's basic food and living was costs were very low in East Germany. But everything what is related to luxury, up to things what the government didn't want you to own, like computers or Xerox machines, you know, they would cost 60,000 East German marks.
So to invest, you wouldn't get much on your return if you bought property in East Germany and had to rent it out at $20 to $30 a month.
That's right. And that's a problem. You know, on one hand, you have to have, and that's just one example again for everything what's going on. On one hand, you want to, you know, somehow sanitize the whole system. You want to make it possible that you have the possibility to give everybody a convenient flat, you know, with bathrooms and central heating and so on. On the other hand, if you would invest in it, you couldn't even get the costs back, you know. And that's the same with the plants, you know. On one hand, they want to make it sure that people can stay in their jobs. On the other hand, if you have to employ so many people, you can't really build up your plant, because then the products are more expensive to produce than you would get money for them. And that's the way it worked.
Is there some sort of a planning council in West Germany that kind of oversees the whole thing from the general standpoint?
Yeah, that's what I talked about, the Treuhandanstalt, this special council. But they had to deal a lot. There is one article on The Economist what talks about this, what had to deal with this problem for about 1 year without, you know, making people content, because East German people usually would wait that you would offer them something, but nobody was, you know, able to offer you. This is a factory and everything is built up, and here I calculate what you have to invest and everything, and you just do this now. On the other hand, Western investors were somehow, you know, pushed back a little, because they wanted to make sure that people just don't buy areas to make a fortune because of the ground, you know, because of the property. They wanted people to employ other people to save the employment. So we have now a rate of unemployment about 11 to 12% in East Germany, and then we have this short work, what affects another 18 to 20% of the people. And this is, of course, what the people didn't expect, you know, and what they didn't want it when they said we are one people and fighting for their freedom.
Actually, we had a similar unemployment in the GDR as well, because it was just covered, because they would have two times as many people employed in a plant what they actually needed, you know. So many people just were hanging around and they didn't really have to do something. But this government could say there's no unemployment, so and they could control them better also. If there's no other question to that, let's talk about the 3rd of October, about the day of this German unity or reunification. As I said, the East German states, five of them, became member of the Federal Republic of Germany, and I actually went away from Berlin. Both for I didn't want to stay there because I was a little scared what would be going on there, and I was afraid that this could happen also without a war, because all of a sudden the country, at least from the Western point of view, was gaining new property, and that's actually what it was, and that would make people feeling more stronger about their themselves, you know, and would raise some kind of nationalism, I was afraid, and Berlin was just the place what I thought where too many people would gather together and express these feelings in a way what I didn't want to participate in. So on the other hand, I was at a conference in Marburg, which is a little town, a student's town in the center of West Germany. And it's actually a pretty left-wing town. There's the second biggest party there is the Green Party. The strongest party is the Left Party, is it socialist? However, the Social Democrats would be more appropriate translation. And even though at this night I went up to the marketplace in the center, it's a very old, beautiful town, just like Rothenburg or so. What, just if you have an idea of that, is these very old small buildings, and it's on a hill, and you have a castle on top, and all these nice, very old buildings. And then this huge marketplace in the center, pretty high, and I came up there, and you know, all the town was pretty dark, of course. And then I could hear a strong male's voice amplified with speakers, loudspeakers, who didn't work as perfect as they should. So the voice was hardly to be understood and sound very, very strange. And somehow it reminded me to something what I have heard before, and I wasn't sure what it was. And then I went up there, and all of a sudden I reached through a very narrow passage, this marketplace, and saw that the whole place was crowded with people. You couldn't move there at all. And there was this person talking on some kind of stage, and there was a huge group of people who would oppose his speech by whistling and shouting. And very many people on the three quarters of the people would have little flags, and you would have big flags coming down from the houses, all the German flag. And this group of opposing people would have little pirate flags and European flags and all these kind of things. And I didn't see them at the first place. What I saw was just these big banners and flags coming down from the wall, hanging down from the wall, and the whole entire marketplace was flooded with light. There were big lights all over the place. And I got, for a moment, I got the impression this is 1937. I was, you know, somehow withdrawn back somewhere, and I thought, well, this just looks like they are just shooting a big movie on those days, you know. And then I realized, well, this is not a movie, this is reality, and this is today, this is 1991. Or 1990 was last year. And it really scared me, you know, this feeling. And then this voice, you know, I found out that it just reminded me to all these speeches held in those days, and I didn't feel very comfortable. But I have to say that even though my first impression was a kind of shock impression, the people weren't so nationalistic as I thought at the first place. They were just celebrating this event. There were some songs being sung, and there were actually no national songs, but religious songs from the German version of the LBW. And there were actually hardly any people who you wouldn't like to meet in the evening, you know, by the way they behaved. And so, and it was also good to see that there were people who would oppose the situation, the celebration, the way it was, and not this, that they were opposing it, but that they were accepted to oppose it also. And there was a very little group of very right-wing young people who didn't know what they were doing and tried to oppose this group, of course, but the majority was eager to accept, you know, both. And even though I didn't feel very comfortable at this place, as I said, I could accept the situation and I didn't feel so bad as I would have felt perhaps in Berlin. On the other hand, we had now this conference, and there were, of course, scientists also from East Germany. And it was pretty strange because we knew this is their day, you know, when this day is over, then they have not the faintest idea what's going on with them. They have no security for their future. They might lose their jobs within 2 days, you know, when they return to Berlin or Dresden or wherever, they might find a letter on their tables. You're fired. I'm sorry, we don't need you anymore. So that was the situation on the 3rd of October, or actually the morning after the hangover. Nobody could be sure that he will have or she will have the job up to the end of the year or further on, you know. And this very high insecurity of these basic needs like having work and money to buy food and pay rent and debts and so on, that made people pretty mad, you know, pretty anxious about what is going on. And all we could do there is just to try we wrote a letter, everybody who was in this conference, that we would like to tell politicians who are in charge of taking care of all kind of educational parts and scientific parts, that we have been working with these scientists already before the wall fell down, and that we think that they were doing a good job what was not related to the political state in their former state, and that we recognize them as important scientists. And I got, because of my involvement in some scientific committees, I had to write these to send these letters to the appropriate persons, and then that was actually the trouble, you know. You couldn't send it to somebody, because if you were sending them to the persons who have been in charge there for yet, they wouldn't read them anymore, and those who would be in charge haven't been elected then. So there was actually nobody really to talk to, nobody you could aim for, and we just could send them to positions, but not to people. And therefore we got only one answer to all these letters from a person who was in charge in evaluating schools and universities. I mean, just imagine, all of a sudden somebody would come and say, I will now, with a group of people, like 6 or 10 people, evaluate every single college in the US, every single university, and say if it's worth to keep it or not. And if I say no, then we will just, you know, close it down, use it for something else, sell it. And what happens to all the students who have been studying there half the way through? What happens to all the professors, teachers, and so on? So that's the situation everywhere. And there was the same, of course, with cars. Like, the biggest factories in East Germany were, of course, the producers of Trabant and Wartburg cars. And all of a sudden they said, we don't need those cars anymore because nobody buys them anymore. And therefore, everybody buys now Western cars. Some of the Western car producers decided to build up their factories in those areas where they have had these East German car productions before, like Zwickau. And
on the schools, why did they? Who's deciding what schools to be closed? The East German government? I mean, the West German government?
From this day on, it was one government, but of course, the people who were in charge were all West German people, and that's what I tried to point out. Yeah.
So the committee of people that are going around are those people that were. That were from East Germany, or are they from the Western side?
From West German side, because, you know, we knew that we had these 100,000, 109,000 people belonging to the Stasi working undercover, and you never know who it is, so to whom to talk to, you know, who to find out who has been loyal to the political system before, especially in the whole area of education, people who have been teaching communism and you know, following it the way they had done that before couldn't be appropriate, you know, to carry on now in those days when we want to build up a democracy what doesn't accept this kind of thoughts.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand one word you're using. Stasi?
Oh, okay. That's called the state security. That's some kind of
secret police.
Yes.
Secret police from East Germany?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
East German secret
okay.
police. They
Thank
were...
You.
Mm-hmm.
In that connection, now, after the last war, there was a whole process of going, of denazification of universities, and it took a long time, businesses and so forth, in occupied Germany, in Nuremberg trials. Do you think something like that's going to happen over in East Germany?
Related to the...
To the Communist Party people, especially the secret police people. What's going to happen?
I don't think so, actually. People are talking about, and there's all the time they reveal things, you know, scandals of any kind. Especially at the beginning, many of politicians were accused to be part of it, and you know. So there are special words for that, like one word is Seilschaften, that is the English term for a group of people who would do mountaineering and they are connected with a rope to each other. So you can't get rid of them. If you want to get rid of one, you would have to get rid of all of them, and they just make sure that they will all stay somehow because they are in different positions all over. On the other hand, the East German government has built up a system how to deal with the situation when there is no GDR anymore. So everybody knew what he or she would have to do after this country wouldn't exist anymore. And nobody really knows what the plans were and who is belonging to that and what's going on. And you know, like they found out that most of the terrorist acts in the 70s were actually financed and also be helped by education by East Germany. You know, all these things what were thought as being part of the students' revolution were, as a matter of fact, just misuse of people by the East German government at those days. So they reveal very many things, but people don't get time to think over and to try to find out to deal with their own history and their own background. Because so many, I mean, two-thirds or so had to be member of the party, otherwise they couldn't have done what they wanted to do, or they couldn't have, you know, being part of the society, they would have been neglected by everybody else. At least they had disadvantages in the society. And now people have to say, well, how do I deal with this, you know? So this big SED party, what was the party, the Socialist Union Party, has lost, I think they have had some, I don't know, I'm not so sure with these numbers, but anyway, they had millions and millions of members, of course, before. And meanwhile, the first couple of months, people left the party, and now there are a few hundred thousands only left who belong to that party officially. So what happens to all these other people who have been belonging to that party for 40 years or 20 years, whatever, and just say, well, now the state changed, I quickly change my identity. You know, very many of them are now politicians in the right party. How do they deal with this, you know? How can they change like that? And I think it will be a long process, and mostly the artists are working it out, you know. They will do paintings and drawings and sculptures and poems, and we have quite a few of good pieces of literature dealing with these problems, and we have quite a few good movies that try to work out these problems and deal with these questions. Let's go to 1991. We now pay, since 1st of July, higher taxes. That's, of course, another thing what was following. And that just shows that the lap between East and West is still very, very big, because they had to finance all these things. And in some part, like in the southern part of East Germany, it works out pretty fine already. But in the northern part does need very much financial aid, and they, even though, you know, they would have now their own governments and receive their own taxes, if there's hardly anybody to pay taxes, you can't give money away. So they are still dependent on the money what comes from the West to make sure that the social security works out, because everybody who has no work, of course, gets social insurance. What is not very much, but it's enough to pay rent and food, so people don't have to starve or live on the streets, not necessarily. That's the thing now, that very many people in West Germany, of course, don't feel very happy about that they have to pay more and more, and they say, you know, why don't they work themselves? And the situation is very complex and complicated. As the example with the houses, you know, either you invest more, but then you have to gain more, or you don't gain enough, then you can't invest anything. You know, it's the devil's circle. I personally think that the whole situation is very interesting because of basically two things. One thing is this fast progress of the unification, or the so-called unification. It tells that things, what you pointed out, or what we have been talking about before, can't work out nicely. There's the action is always before the thought, and that makes it very difficult. The people can't follow with their emotions, they can't follow with their moral, they can't really make up their minds what they actually want, and it's very, very difficult to find out where to put the money in, for example, where to invest at the beginning or later on. So they have asked for very much money, they have got a lot of money, and later on you found out that they very much money wasn't used at all. It was staying in on the bank accounts, because the people didn't know what to buy first and how to do the investments, especially on the part of bureaucracy, to speed things up in the progress of the building up of these things. So we have another example that somehow international politics force you to actions what can't be the best solution if you look back at it. The other thing is that we can use now the experiences from this unification somehow to anticipate what might be going on with the European community in 92. So even though we have two countries now what use almost the same language, have the same traditions, cultural backgrounds, what have had pretty soon the same currency and so on, even though you see that there are so many problems, you get an imagination of what is going on if you want to do that on a bigger scale, with countries having using different languages, very different economical structures, like Portugal, which is based on agriculture, or other countries like Sweden, based on steel and car and electronics. I just wish that those politicians who are in charge of the decisions, what still have to be made, will at least use this opportunity to figure out what their decisions mean, not in terms of numbers, in terms of movements on a green table, but also in terms of personal experiences. And I found out that very, very many people in East Germany, after being very happy at the beginning that they could travel and that they felt that there might be a change in their lives, feel very frustrated and depressed nowadays. It is hopeful that things will become better when the people see things going on. And if you go to East Berlin, you see that it changed every month quite a lot. It becomes more and more lively, more and more colorful, even though special cultural movements are somehow turned back. Because, again, the money has to be used first to build up factories, and education and high culture are the last what you would give money for.
Was education neglected in East Germany?
No, they just had a very different way of education as we had. So, like, very, very easy example is that they would learn Russian as a first foreign language. That big part of their studies was always to read Marx and Engels and Lenin and discuss this. And they were educated in a very narrow-minded way. So in East Germany you couldn't get any book, you know, you could get only books from East Europe, and they would not allow you to have other books from the West. You couldn't read them or get them.
So it's more limited.
Very limited, very limited. You couldn't even, there was no Xerox machine, so you couldn't copy anything. You couldn't buy most of the books, even they were produced in East Germany, because they were basically produced to be sold in West Germany. So it was very hard, for, at least for the interesting books. You know, I mean...
I don't know if you finished with what you wanted to say, but on Friday someone asked about the church and what happened to the church in all this, or is happening to the church. Is there anything that you'd like to say about that?
Yes. To finish the thought now, I would just like to give this quote from this the morning after what I liked a lot, to resume the reunification and their effects in one sentence. For many, reunification was a giddy ride, too fast for safety, followed by a letdown. And we just hope that this valley will be overcome. And that's actually the same thought what I would like to have for the church, because the church was the most important and the bravest opponent of the socialist regime in East Germany. They were the only who would stand against and try to build up forums for people to talk about their problems and their unhappiness. They would build up in Berlin, for example, they have been building up in some basement of a church some kind of resource center, what deals especially with environmental problems. It was not allowed, of course, in East Germany to tell in public what you know about the factories and their pollution, that the effects of the factories in East Germany were so bad on the environment that almost anything is poisoned there. So these churches made that possible, and they had to deal a lot, fight a lot with Stasi, with the security police, and people opposing them. But on the other hand, there was the Western Church, who tried to help as good they could, and there was always this secret information exchange, what they had, you know, like people would bring in some informations and exchange informations and publish informations also in the West to make it safer for people in the East to work with things. Pretty similar with the artists, but they worked more on a personal, individual scale, like trying to point out things mostly disguised in their art somehow. So people who would like to see or were able to see would see what they meant, would understand what they thought and what they tried to point out, and the other people wouldn't probably get it. So it worked. It worked, and I won't say that they haven't been as brave as the people from the church, but they choose a different mean, you know. But since the revolution had worked out, the attendance of the church has, I think, lost about 2/3. So now everybody is more interested in where to get money and how, what to buy next and how to overcome, I don't know what, personal problems without the help of the church and their faith. So there are just very few people who leave. On the other hand, there are very many people, not many, but quite a few people who are adults and now use the chance to confirm themselves what they didn't dare to do before. So maybe this is also a giddy ride, what might go up sometime again. If there's no other question, okay.
The nationalistic feelings that were part of the beginning of the Second World War, of uniting Danzig with the rest of Germany, are they completely dead now? In the 60s I saw they weren't. And how will the new republic deal with Poland over that issue?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is of course a group of those what they call themselves fugitives, you know, from related to the war. And they opposed, especially in the beginning, to call East Germany East Germany, because they said this is Middle Germany. And that was a group basically of elder people who still had in their minds the idea of a Germany what would have the same borders as it was before the Second World War. That doesn't mean that they accepted Adolf Hitler or that they liked the idea of the war. They just say this is the original Germany and that's what it has to be someday, and everything what is taken away is just agreements between Hitler and Stalin, or agreements what have been done by others after the war. So the Poland issue was actually a very strong issue, because Chancellor Kohl was not able to say at once, we accept the borders as they are. And it took quite a while, what means about 2 months or so, to make the whole German government being able to accept the borders and write contracts with Poland, that Poland now knows we will keep this border and there will be no further interest of Germany to regain anything what has belonged to Germany before the Second World War. So in terms of politics, it is now a topic anymore. I don't know what is going on with this little part, this little Russian part between Poland and Lithuania. There's this little edge, what belonged to Germany before. What if that might be sometime a topic, but I don't think so.
Has there been a peace treaty signed, you know, when the four powers left Berlin? And is this an international peace treaty that says these are the borders?
To Poland or?
Yeah. Today Germany.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was.
So this is internationally, there's no problem
internationally. It's now all clear.
Mm-hmm. Who would solve that problem then about that part of Lithuania between Lithuania and Poland? Who would solve that?
I don't know. I think it will be probably a problem between Russia and Lithuania and Poland, perhaps. I don't think that there will be. There might be even, you know, some of these groups would claim that belongs to us, but I don't think that it will be a big issue. So that's of course a group, and then we have these neo-Nazis, and they have been pretty strong in the East now, because young people who didn't actually know what they were doing, what they were talking about, just followed this because they knew that they could provoke the others, and that it was just the opposite of that, or what they thought would be the opposite of that, or what has been going on in their country 40 years before. It was found out that there's about 150 people who are some kind of leaders in this way, and a few thousands who are very eager to follow, but most of them are young people, unemployed people, you know, dealing with problems what many people in their age have to deal with in other countries as well. And so their focus, their ideas on that, as long as they have no safe background, you know, no family on